Thank you very much. Good to watch everybody. Many of us are familiar with the Rambam, who writes that one should always try to go the derech hamamutza, not to be extreme, one direction or the other, to go in the middle of the road. Unless a person lives in a generation where the whole generation is going in the wrong direction, so then the Rambam says you have to go to the opposite extreme until you straighten out, and then you go back to the derech hamamutza. The Rambam is quoting Aristotle, okay? And the Rambam is also quoting the Gemara. The Gemara says that the Chumash has the Parshas Nazir next to the Parshas Sota, and the Mishnayos have it like that. Mishnayos Nazir is next to Mishnayos Sota. So the Gemara says that under normal circumstances, it's not proper to accept upon oneself an Aziris, not to drink wine, to abstain from drinking wine. To drink wine in excess to become a shikur is a terrible thing. But to drink a little bit of wine is not so bad, once in a while, to relax. But haroi is sota bikulkula, if a person lives in a generation where he sees pritzis and gili arayis, and one can easily understand that it probably comes from the fact that the people are drinking. So yazaratzma menayayin, so we recommend a person should accept the net in the zeros. So unfortunately, we live in a generation where we see more than one sota. You read the newspapers every day, there are many sotas. We live in a generation which is poritz begezel and poritz barayis, so we have to go to the other extreme. So when a person has a job, a person should be careful to see to it that he comes on time and that he puts in all of the hours, and he shouldn't use the company phone for personal phone calls. I guess a little bit is acceptable. In the yeshiva, all the years, there was one Rebbe who never used to call his wife on the yeshiva phone. He would always use the pay phone. There was one Rebbe did like that. All the other Rebbe's, within reason, they used the phone. There was one Rebbe who used to call Eretz Yisrael all the time. So they discontinued his phone in his office. He used to call California Eretz Yisrael. That was outright zayin. Within reason, you can call your wife once or twice a day or something like that. A person shouldn't use on the business hours. He's in business. He shouldn't use the time for personal things, unless the person is a secretary and there's nothing happening there. So he doesn't have to sit empty-handed and do nothing. Okay, but if he's expected to do work for the boss, so he should put in the full time doing the work for the boss. It's recorded in the biographies of Rav Kook that he, whenever he would have a get, or a chasana, and you have to have kosher eidim. So kosher eidim means that they're not ganovim. Al toshiyot chem rosh uliyos eid chomos. The pasuk says the eid who's posled is a ganov, a person who steals from someone else. And then the Gemara has a machlekes, and we paskin even a Jew who's not a ganov, but he's not observant. He doesn't keep kashrus, he doesn't keep Shabbos. That's machlekes abai v'rav, and we paskin like abai. That's one of the six cases we paskin like abai, the al-kigam. But the main pasuk says about the ganav. You're not allowed to have a ganav as an aid. Rav Kook would always be medactic not to use someone who was a secretary. He wouldn't use the secretary in the bezin as an aid because he was afraid that often the secretary will use a stamp from the office for his own personal mail, or he'll use an envelope, or use the telephone for his own personal purposes. So strictly speaking, such a person is probably kosher l'aid, because the Gemara says, if a person does geneva, but he's marahetter, he talks it into himself, it's not so bad, because everybody does like that, and the boss has a lot of money, a lot of money is coming in now, so the Gemara calls it ganef nisin, the ganef tishri. If you work on a farm, so in the months of nisin, the months of tishri, there's so many bushels of food, and the boss is making so much money, so the workers take liberties, and they take home, every so often, take home a bushel of food that they're not entitled to. So the Gemara says if a ganef cheats a little bit, people cheat a little bit on income tax here and there, so strictly speaking, there would be kosher leidus, because that's considered ganef b'shege. But it's still geneva. Even though the person knows you're not allowed to do it, when you get to psuli eidus, the Gemara says, well, nekel, but the people should know they're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to cheat on income tax, you're not allowed to do business off the books. Whatever money a person earns, he has to record it. And today, one who doesn't pay tax is not stealing from the government, he's stealing from all the other shutfim. Whoever doesn't pay tax is stealing from me, because I pay tax. So my taxes are up, because some of the other people are not paying tax. Years ago, it was considered, Gozel, the Rambam writes, Gozel menas ha-melech, he's stealing from the king. The years ago, the purpose of the taxes was in order to enrich the king, in order to enrich the governor. But today, the purpose of the taxes is just to cover the budget, to pay for the garbage collection and the mail delivery and the highways that are built by this city and the forests and the public schools and so on and so forth. So that we're all shutfim together in this enterprise. We shutfim on a municipal level, we shutfim on a state level, we shutfim on the federal government pays for certain things. And the state government pays for certain things, and the municipal government pays for certain things. So we're considered shutfim on three levels. So we have to pay taxes. So whoever doesn't pay taxes is stealing from all the other shutfim. The government is like the secretary who sends out a bill for the company. So if you don't pay your bills to the company, you're not stealing from the secretary, you're stealing from the company. So here also, whoever doesn't pay taxes, really stealing from all the other shutfim. So unfortunately, we live in a generation that's so poritz and gezel. Read the papers every single day. There's another person is caught. These are the people who are caught. Big people caught for cheating millions of dollars. I remember once I was at a wedding. The boy had learned in the Kollel, and then he went on after he finished smicha. He went on to learn in Lakewood, and when he married a girl from the Aguda world, so the kibbutzim were divided 50-50, so they couldn't divide see the kiddushin. So Rav Shneur Kotler was Masada Kiddushin because the boy was learning a Lakewood. And then every other kibbutz was divided 50-50. So they called me up to be one of the 80 Kiddushin. And they called up a rabbi from Borough Park to be the other 8. So people were waiting. Rav Shneur Kotler told me a whole beautiful Dvar Torah under the chuppah. And the other guy didn't show up. And I printed it after he passed away. I printed it in his name in one of my svarim. What he said. So finally we got another 8. So the next morning, I was in the yeshiva. And I bumped into Rabbi Herschel Schechter. Senior, the one who was a chaplain in the Second World War. So he says, you know, I was at the wedding last night and that rabbi was standing next to me. And I asked him, why don't you go up? So he says, they can get other aid, they have other aid. So we didn't understand why he didn't go up to be the aid. So by the end of the week, we did understand. The wedding was on a Sunday night. By Thursday, we knew why. He was prominently written up in the newspaper. He was indicted for his lunch programs in his yeshiva. He was a ganef. So he was an honest guy, and if he knew he was pasalatus, he didn't go up to serve as an aide. If a person cheats a little bit on income tax here and there, it's zeli, not allowed to, but he probably kosheladus. Rav Kook did as a humra. He didn't want to rely on that kula. Others wouldn't take any businessman. They quote Avnei Nezer, the Sacher Shavu Rebbe, would never use as an aide a businessman. He was choshish that all businessmen are ganovim. Shaking. Wow. But this guy was really big time Meganef. He had a runaway to Eretz Yisrael. Now he lives in Eretz Yisrael. So big time Ganef. You can't say Maraheta. So he knew he was Posseleitis. Should all be careful. Should all be careful on the Gezel. We live in a generation where so many people are Poritz on Arayis. They had in the newspapers that General Petraeus violated Yichud. Look what happened. And one thing led to another. And he's embarrassed. The man is deadly embarrassed. We should all be careful. One thing leads to another. There was a Jewish fellow who also violated Yichud and they gave him 103 years in prison. He should live so long. And Arichas Yamin. But violating Yichud, maybe more than Yichud. One thing leads to another. Yichud is either an Issa Derais, an Issa Derabon, whatever it is, it's a serious din. We all have to be careful for the prohibition of yichud. Yichud is not only if two people walk into a room together, a man and a woman walk in together. That's more than yichud. That's what we call stira. There's kinui, stira by soita. But even, let's say, if you have 100 people in an office, and little by little, at the end of the day, everybody leaves. And the last two people who are there, a man and a woman, so the bimikret turns out that there's yichud. So there's also a din of yichud. The person has to be careful. If the woman who's there is a married woman, a Jewish married woman, and by la boyer, the husband is in town, the husband also has an office in town, or the husband lives in town. So then the Gemara says, we assume that that's the pshat in the Gemara, that by la boyer, there's no isa yichud. But if the girl is single, or the husband doesn't live in town, then it's takan isa yichud. So the person has to be careful. Isa yichud is a real din. There is a din of kiruv basar. One is not permitted to hug or kiss someone else's wife, derech chiba, or a single girl who hasn't gone to mikveh, is an isa kira basa derechiba. Strictly speaking, if someone wants to shake hands with me, so that's not really derechiba. We should try to avoid it, but strictly speaking, that's not derechiba. I remember last year I had a lot of trouble with my checking account, so I had to spend half an hour in the bank with this woman till she straightened everything out. And after it was all straightened out, then she stretched out a hand. So I shook her hand. I said, thank you very much. Then she got so scared. Oh, you're from yeshiva. She thought a lightning was going to come down and strike him. So I said, okay, I'm from yeshiva. Okay, I had no desire for this woman. So strictly speaking, kira basa derechiba is the iser. If it's not derechiba, it's mutter. Strictly speaking, shaking hands, not derechiba. Whenever you can, you should avoid it. So let's say, if I know that they want to shake hands, I should always try to carry something in my right hand. Carry something in both hands. So they won't expect you to switch your attaché case to the left hand. Try to carry something in both hands, so you won't have to shake hands with anyone. If you get stuck and you have to shake hands, so the world doesn't come to an end. Strictly speaking, it's not the derechiba. If a person is married, so then we have harchokas. Ishto nido, we have harchokas, so that's not permissible. So shake hands with your wife when she's a nido, that's not permissible. But we're not talking about ishto nido, we're talking about someone else's wife, or a non-Jewish woman, whatever, single girl. Strictly speaking, there's no prohibition. The same thing, strictly speaking, someone comes over to me, she wants to hug me or something like that. So let her hug me? Okay. That's not derechiba, I'm not interested in her. If a person is truly not interested. Male doctors are permitted to treat women, and female doctors are permitted to treat men, because we assume that they're Isaac and their business, and they don't have any desire for the other person. Sometimes if a doctor is single and the patient is good-looking, he may have a desire for the woman, so he has to be careful. If that is the case, he has to be careful. But we usually assume that a doctor or a nurse is treating a patient is not considered derechiba. There's an issue. People work in offices, and they'll use the Xerox machine. And the boss is not watching, so they'll Xerox 100 pages. So that's not right. Whatever you wouldn't do when the boss is watching, you're not allowed to do when the boss is not watching. That's geneva. You're using Shol Shalom Midas. You're using his machine without his permission. If you know that he's not makbid, if you're positive that the boss is not makbid, then it's okay. And if your superior gives you permission, but your superior is not really the boss of the company, so you have to really try to figure out, does that represent the opinion of the boss also? The boss is also not makbid? Or just the superior doesn't care, because it's not her company. Maybe the boss would be makbid. You have to be careful about that. That's really considered geneva. Eating in a non-kosher restaurant used to be, years ago, a big issue of Marisayan. A religious person goes into a non-kosher restaurant, so people will think that he's a faker, he's a hypocrite, he really eats non-kosher when nobody's watching. I think in New York by now, most of the people know that it's very common that religious people will eat in a non-kosher restaurant. They'll buy a Coca-Cola or they'll buy a fruit. And they'll eat the fruit. So now I think in New York for sure there's no marisayan. People will understand a person goes to a restaurant, a religious person is going to eat kosher food there. The Coca-Cola is kosher. Okay, that's not a problem. It could be that the cup that they're serving it in is going to be treif. So the Shulchan Aruch says that if you get stuck once in a while and you have to eat some cold food in the home of a non-Jew, so you're permitted to use a non-kosher cup or a plate or a fork or a knife, provided that the food that you're eating is cold and it's not hot, so the treif abliya that's absorbed in the plate or in the cup is not going to go if the cup is clean. Usually the cup, we assume the cup is going to be clean. Not going to give you a greasy sticky, sometimes they will, okay? So make sure you have a clean cup before you pour your Coca-Cola in. If you have a treif knife and you're cutting the fruits, that's also not a problem. The food is cold and the knife is cold and the knife is clean, it's not a problem. If you order from the kitchen, the others are ordering, the other non-Jews and non-observant Jews are ordering non-kosher meals, you're going to order that they should cut up a platter of fruits. So I remember many years ago, the OU used to have weekends, or the New York regional of OU used to have weekends in the Hamowak Hotel, Olam HaShalom. I don't think they're open anymore. And they used to have a single session on Friday night. So they always used to have me speak at the single session, and they had till 1 o'clock at night, 2 o'clock at night, then they had me say Daf Yomi at 8 o'clock in the morning, the next morning. So I remember once at a single session, someone asked me this, are you permitted to ask for a platter of cut up fruit? So I thought that it was permissible. I thought in the kitchen, they're not going to take the knife that they cut chazer and cut the fruits or the vegetables. So one of the young men spoke up from the audience and he said, with all due respect, that's not correct. He used to work in different kitchens in different hotels. And he says, some chefs are makbid on that. And they'll be very non-Jewish chefs. Some of them will be very insistent on washing off the knife before they're going to cut the fruits. And others will not be insistent on that. And it's not necessarily in proportion to how fancy the hotel is. You can have a 5-star hotel and the chef is a slob. And he'll cut the chazer, and then he'll cut right away the fruit. And you can have a hotel where they have mice and rats running around in all the bedrooms. And the chef is makbid on the kiyas, and he'll wash off the knife. So you shouldn't request that they should cut fruit unless you know the nature of the kitchen, that they're makbid on that. If they have, let's say, many trays of fruit that are already cut up in a refrigerator, so obviously they cut up a lot of fruits. So then you can assume that even if the first time they started cutting the fruits, they cut 10 platters of fruits. If I'm ordering one platter of fruits, so then I don't know. Maybe the chef in the kitchen is going to use the knife that's for the chazer, is going to wipe off the chazer on the fruits. But if they have their 10 different platters of fruits, so even if he used the tray for knife and he wiped off all the chazer, but by the time he gets to the third platter of fruits, all the chazer was already wiped off on the first two platters. So then you're going to have a taruvis. Let's say you'll have 7 platters of fruits that don't have any chazer on them and 3 platters of fruits that do have chazer schmaltz on the fruits. So that's a din, that is batel b'rayv. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. It's batel b'rayv in such a case. But if you're ordering one platter of fruit, then you have to know for sure that the chef in the kitchen is makbed on cleaning the knife beforehand. As far as ordering vegetables, even if you go to a kosher restaurant, even if you're home, you have to make sure that the vegetables don't have any bugs in them. Last night I spoke in the yeshiva, so they had an oneg, Tu Bishvat oneg. Tu Bishvat, they like to serve figs and dates and all this kind of junk. So I had a drink of Coca-Cola. Some of the boys were eating the figs and the dates, so they opened it up and they found big bugs. It's not chalaimus. One of the rabbis said, where's the bug? Where's the bug? One of the rabbis said, couldn't see the bug. But the student saw the bug, said, don't you see the legs? They had Turkish, figs from Turkey or something. Yeah, a lot of the fruits have bugs, and a lot of the vegetables have bugs. Even if you're eating in your own home, you have to be careful for bugs. If you eat in a non-kosher restaurant, you certainly have to be careful for bugs. And of course, you have to be careful that if you order cut-up vegetables, even if you're just ordering tomatoes, carrots, whatever, it could be that the chef is not makbid on cleanliness, and he used, if you're the only one who's ordering, he used the knife that he just cut the nevelis, chazer schmaltz. He's going to wipe off all the chazer schmaltz on your vegetables. You have to be careful about that. A person has to be careful that he davens mincha. The Gemara places a lot of emphasis about davening mincha. Eliyahu HaNavi was answered with tefillas ha-mincha, and everybody should be very careful about mincha. So Rav Soloveitchik always used to say in his public talks, because mincha is the middle of the day. Shacharis is before you go to work, and Meir is after you come home. And mincha is the middle of the day. You have to make sure, especially in the winter, when the sun sets early. Now the sun sets after 5 o'clock, have a little more time, but still, you have to be careful to daven mincha, don't forget. Strictly speaking, the Mishnah says that the women are just as obligated as the men to daven. The women are supposed to daven also. So some of the women only daven once a day. That's not really right. They're supposed, some of the women only rely on Moedari. That's not right. They're supposed to daven Shmon Esrei. How much more they have to daven? So look in the Svarim, how much you're supposed to daven. But the women should also see to it that they daven mincha. An Erev Shabbos, a person has to be careful to make sure that he comes home in time. When I'm going to shul on Erev Shabbos, I see a lot of people are just running home from the train. They didn't even take the shower yet. I try to go to shul a half an hour before the shkiyah. The Gemara speaks about the mitzvah of Tosefes Shabbos to be mosif mechoil al hakodesh, And the Poskim and Shulchan Aruch quote the Rabbeinu Peretz, who says that Tosefes Shabbos, Tosefes says, it would appear from the Gemara that there's a minimum amount of time that you're supposed to be mosif mechol al hakodesh. But Tosefes doesn't know how much is that a minimum amount of time. So the Poskim quote the Rabbeinu Peretz, Amaseches Beitzah on Daf Lamed, who says that it seems that it's 30 minutes, a half an hour. So really, you should be mekabel more correct, is people should daven mincha early. They should be mekabel Tosefes Shabbos a half an hour before the sun sets on Friday afternoon. So they should come home before that. So that's why when I'm walking to shul, half an hour before Shki on Friday afternoon, I already daven mincha before it, an early minyan. So that's why people are running from the train. So when are they going to take the shower, and when are they going to get dressed for Shabbos? That's not right. I remember when I was a young boy before Bar Mitzvah, there was an elderly gentleman in my father's shul who wanted to meet. I remember he wanted to meet Rav Soloveitchik because he was in the Russian army. And he was sworn in. Each group of soldiers had to be sworn in by a clergyman of his faith. So the Catholics had to be sworn in by a galach, and the Jews had to be sworn in by a rabbi. So he was sworn in by the Beis HaLevi, but Rabbi Yosher Ber Soloveitchik, after whom Rabbi Soloveitchik from Boston was named. So he wanted to meet Rabbi Soloveitchik. So I remember, yes, Rabbi Soloveitchik said, oh, don't bother me, I already met 100 people who were sworn in by my great-grandfather. He wasn't interested. Anyway, so this elderly gentleman who was sworn in by the Beis HaLevi into the army, so he told me he remembered, he lived in Navardik, he remembered when the Oruch HaShulchan came as the rabbi of Navardik. Originally he was a rabbi in a different little village, then he became the rabbi of Navardik. And he says the Jewish farmers used to come in from the farms late on Friday afternoon. And they used to bathe for Shabbos, and they used to come to shul late on Friday afternoon. And a lot of them were mechal Shabbos. They would heat up water after the shkia. They would be mezalzel on Shabbos. So the second or the third Shabbos that the Oruch HaShulchan was there in the Vardik, he made a takana that summer and winter were going to be mekabel Shabbos plag amincha early. We have the practice here in America when Mekabel Shabbos early in the summertime because the sun sets so late. Who wants to start eating a meal at 9:30 at night? So when Mekabel Shabbos only in the summer when it's reasonable. So the Oruch HaShulchan's motivation for being Mekabel Shabbos early was because the farmers were Mechal Shabbos. So he instituted a Takana summer, winter, you have to be Mekabel Shabbos at the Plag HaMincha. So the first Shabbos, the Takana was in place. So the Minyan Davin Mincha before the Plag HaMincha and Ma'ariv after. And then all the farmers came later. And they were going to make a minyan in the shul. 100 farmers going to make. So he got up and he said, no second minyan in the big shul. He made them all daven b'yichidus. There were 100 farmers there. He made them all daven b'yichidus. And he broke their practice of being mechal Shabbos. So they knew the minyan was going to be early. So even if they would come late, but whatever, heating the water, whatever malachas they would do, would all be before the shkia. They would come late to the davening, so to the daven b'yichidus. You have to be careful. You have to leave the office on time. You have to tell them in the office. You have to leave. It's not right when people apply for a job and they don't tell the boss in advance that they're Shomrei Shabbos. A lot of times, see, now a kulpa is going to protect your religious rights and they're going to fight for you and they're going to see to it that they don't fire you because you want to be a Shomrei Shabbos. That's very nice of kulpa that they do that, but it's an iser. From the perspective of halacha, it's not permissible to apply for a job and to fool the boss into believing that I can work the same as everybody else. I can't. Let's say in a law firm, and they need someone to work like a mishugana straight from Friday to Sunday afternoon. I have to tell them in advance, I'm a Shem Shabbos, and I won't be able to work on the weekends. So you have to tell them, I'll make up on Sunday, I'll make up nights, whatever. But you're not allowed to take a job and fooling them into believing that you're not going to take off. So if you have a job, you have to make sure that you leave early enough and you have to have plan B, just in case the trains don't work. So where are you going to be for Shabbos? What, you're going to walk? You're going to walk 5 miles till you get home? You have to figure out, you have to have in mind plan B, where you're going to be in case you're not able to get home. Everybody has an issue with, you work in an office with non-Jews, everybody has an issue with nivul peh. You have to be careful not to speak nivul peh, not to listen to nivul peh. You have to. I have a niece who used to work for many years in a business, so they knew. So the non-Jews knew when she's in the room, they didn't speak nivul peh. They knew that she found it offensive. In a nice way, she explained to them that she finds it offensive. So they would be careful not to talk nivul peh when she would be in the room. Lashon Hara is a din, even Jews, unfortunately, some of our best friends talk Lashon Hara. We're not permitted to talk Lashon Hara, not permitted to talk Lashon Hara even about one's spouse, even about your closest friends. Miriam was punished for speaking Lashon Hara against her brother Moshe Rabbeinu. She loved her brother. She respected him. She thought that he did wrong in Parshat Palos, because she spoke Lashon Hara thinking that he did wrong. She didn't mean to ruin his reputation or to ruin his business or to ruin his parnasa or anything. And still, it was considered Lashon Hara, even though it didn't really hurt him, even though Moshe Rabbeinu didn't lose anything by that. The prohibition of Lashon Hara applies even in such a case. You have to be careful not to talk Lashon Hara. People have nothing better to do, so they start talking Lashon Hara. Chabad Chaim, they say, the people who knew him say he was extremely talkative. He was a very friendly person. Moshe Feinstein was also a very friendly person. He used to, when people would carry on conversation with him, he would talk with them. Women would chatter to him, Narishkeit, and he would chatter back to them, and he would be thinking Mishnayis. That's a trick. He'd be thinking Mishnayis at the time. The women, I remember there was a situation. A woman was carrying on a whole conversation about how blackberries grow. Blueberries, blackberries. And Moshe was explaining how they grow, and whether you say Bar Pi Huetz or Bar Pi Hadama, how high the bushes are, and so on. And he was muttering under his breath, as the woman was chattering, he was muttering under his breath, Mishnayis. The woman didn't realize it. So you can be careful not to speak Lashon Hara, and be a good conversationalist also. It doesn't mean that you have to isolate yourself from human beings and not to talk to people. You have to talk, but you have to know how to divert the conversation to other things. One is not permitted to speak Lashon Hara against a fellow Jew, against a non-Jew. There's no prohibition to speak Lashon Hara unless it's going to outright Lashon Hara. The Chafetz Chaim assumes the prohibition of Lashon Hara is because it may ruin the other fellow. So let's say I'll talk Lashon Hara against a non-Jew. I'll explain to his wife that he's having an extramarital affair with someone else and I'm going to ruin his marriage. So that's prohibited even against a non-Jew. I'm going to ruin his whole business because of Lashon Hara. That's mamish mazik, and not allowed to be mazik a non-Jew. When I say about a person, he's a stupid person. So I didn't ruin any business for him. I didn't ruin any shidduchim for him. I said he's stupid, so that's my opinion. So if it's against the fellow Jews, even that's not permissible. I say, let's say I teach in kindergarten. So I say, this child, this woman's child is stupid. He doesn't behave. So that's an ish lashon hara. Why? It may ruin a shidduch in the future. It may ruin a job, a possibility of a job in the future. So that's very far-fetched. So that's only also if the person about whom I'm telling the lashon hara, the child in the kindergarten, is Jewish. If he's not Jewish, such a far-fetched chashash is permissible. So to talk Lashon Hara against a non-Jew in such a case, that would be permissible. To talk Lashon Hara, outright Lashon Hara, is going to ruin Mamish, ruin his business, of course, a hefsid, ruin his marriage. That you shouldn't do even against a non-Jew. To talk Lashon Hara against the Chavetz Chaim always writes every 10 pages, to talk Lashon Hara against a Jew who's totally non-observant, he's not religious at all, so that's permissible. Chumash only says, Selach Rachel Ba'amecha, one is Oysa Maisa Amcha, one who is a religious Jew. The other, the person about whom I'm talking, Lashon Hara, is not religious, very much not religious, not observant at all. So then, strictly speaking, there's no prohibition of Lashon Hara. Just today in the yeshiva, one of the rabbonim was discussing that people in business, he gave a public share about this, people in business have a problem with ribis. A lot of times people invest in companies and organizations and somewhere, they lend out money by ribis. So if they're lending money to people in India, so the rive is that the people in India are probably not Jewish. But if you're lending big money here in New York, so it could be the rive is that the people borrowing big money are Jewish. So there are prohibitions, there's ribis der Raisa, there's ribis der Rabbanon, there are certain leniencies, there are certain kulos on ribis der Rabbanon. If you know that sometimes ribis der Rabbanon, there's only an issue of lifnei receiving the ribis der Rabbanon, borrowing the money by ribis der Rabbanon. So then sometimes if the other Jew is going to lend anyway to another Jew by ribis der Rabbanon, so then it'll be mutter. But one has to go through the dinim. One has to know whether you're dealing with a Jew and non-Jew, and you have to know what's ribis der Raisa, what's ribis der Rabbanon. Doctors and nurses have to know that most of the time, abortions are not permissible. You're not allowed to kill a person who already was born. You're not allowed to pull a plug to hasten a person's death. A lot of times, if a person is holding by the end, the stipler has, after the Chazon Ish passed away, so they published a collection of letters written by the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish had a beautiful style Hebrew. He developed his own style Hebrew, an original signon, like Rav Soloveitchik had his own style of Hebrew. So the Chazanish had an original style of papacy. After the Stipler, his brother-in-law passed away, so they also published a collection of letters of the Stipler. His style of Hebrew was nothing to talk about. Very rough, very rough style of Hebrew. So in one of the letters that he has there, so someone asked him about the end of life issues. That's most of the shalas today about end of life. What are you doing? Someone's holding by the end. So he writes an interesting point. He says, when we were young children, it was ingrained in our minds that the Jewish position always is that you push on, you always extend a person's life. Then we started to study Gemara, then we studied Shulchan Aruch, we came to the realization it's just not true. A lot of times there's no mitzvah to extend a person's life. If you see that you're not getting anywhere, you're just seeing Oyster Neshama, just the person himself. The person has no right. The person has no right to commit suicide. The person is not a balabos on his life, so he has no right to tell me I should kill him. Mercy killing we don't permit. Euthanasia is not permissible. But b'shevi al taseh, it is permissible. A lot of times if it's just unreasonable to extend the person's life, so there's no mitzvah to extend his life. So to pull a plug means to kill him right now. Well, let's say a person is on intravenous, so you take away the intravenous, so you're taking away his ability to live another couple of hours. But if you don't replace the intravenous, so many poskim won't let that's permissible. So that the religious doctors in the hospitals already have procedures. They already have rabbonim. There are rabbonim to ask about this. So just like it's not permissible to kill a person who is living already, not permissible to abort a baby either, unless there's a sakana to the mother. In rare instances, a sakana for mother, then it's permissible to do an abortion. Otherwise, you're not allowed to. So it's not permissible to perform sirus, to castrate an animal or to castrate a human being, a Jew or a non-Jew. It's not permissible. So it's not permissible for one to serve as a nurse. In such a day, if you don't have the nurses, you need a lot of hands there when you're going to perform serious or you're going to perform an abortion. One person can't do it all on his own just with two hands. You need the assistance of quite a few people there. So all those who are participating in the Aveira. They're helping out to do an Isra of Lifnei Iver. Abortion is prohibited for non-Jews also, and killing is even mercy killing is prohibited for the non-Jews as well. Sometimes the nurses are expected to serve food to the patients. Sometimes they're expected to serve chametz dikim meals to a Jewish patient. So that's a lifnei iver l'siti mirsha. Some they're expected to serve non-kosher food to a Jewish patient. That's a problem. To serve chametz to a non-Jewish patient is also prohibited. Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Talmud Yerushalmi, you're not permitted to give chametz to a behemah sefker. If there's a behemah in the street that doesn't belong to me, I'm not getting hanor. And there's chametz in the garbage can, so I want to do the behema taiva, so I take the chametz that's not my chametz, I take chametz out of the garbage can, and I feed it to the behema sefker. So the Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to do that. So to serve chametz to a non-Jewish patient in hospital is also not permissible. One has to be careful. Sometimes it's expected of the nurses that they should help a Jewish patient shave with a razor, that he should look better. So the shape of the razor, I should help him shape of the razor, that's an issus. You have to tell another nurse, you have to tell a non-Jewish nurse that she should take over. A Jewish religious person is not allowed to do that. We just read today that Parsha Samon in the Chumash, and the lesson of the Parsha Samon is that we believe that Parnosas min HaShemayim, and a person should not think that I'm going to have to compromise on Shabbos and religious observance, otherwise I won't be able to make a living. How can you be in business if you don't violate a little bit over here, a little bit over there, to cheat a little bit and to violate Shabbos a little bit? We believe that the parnasa is min hashamayim, and if the person deserves his parnasa, he's going to get the parnasa. We should be careful as much as possible to the best of our ability. We should be careful to observe all the dinim, the laws of Shabbos and the laws of kashrus and the laws of honesty in business, and then so on and so forth, and then we will deserve the parnasa that comes min hashamayim. We shouldn't cut corners, and we shouldn't think, I feel machal Shabbos once in a while, I'll eat treifas in the restaurant once in a while, so then later we'll be religious. Once a person starts to violate, one thing leads to another. Maybe we'll open the floor for discussion. Anyone wants to raise some specific issues? I just gave a general outline.
I have a question that is unique to our time right now, and I have comments in my office, Sandy, but my office is enclosed, and I don't know when I'll be back. What do I do in terms of if I'm not back before Pesach?
I mean, you can't get there.
I can't get there. No,
so Gaon say mafke the chametz, you mevatle mafke.
Just not be mafke.
Yeah.
And the second question, if I'm at a hotel and business and they bring kosher meal and they ask, do you want it warmed up because it's got a little bit of a chill, and I tell them to triple wrap it, hoping that at least it'll be double wrapped, but I tell them to bring it out to me with the tin foil, and they didn't brought it out not tin foil. Can I rely that they warmed it up in tin foil if they said they were going to do it?
It's a question of psychology. It depends. Does he look like he's telling the truth? Al Pidin, a person who doesn't keep kosher, either a non-Jew or a non-religious Jew, doesn't keep kosher, doesn't have nemanis on kashrus. Hachosher al adav al adon av lamida. One only has nemanis on something if he observes that area. The mikveh lady has to be a woman who observes taras hamishpacha. The restaurant owner has to be a person who observes kashrus. Otherwise, doesn't have nemanis. But strictly speaking, the non-Jew doesn't have that money. If it looks like he's telling the truth, so then you have a psychological umdir in that he's telling the truth. Sometimes they're not telling the truth. They just want to do you a favor and they say, everything is kosher. So if it looks like, I don't know, each case is different. If it looks like he's telling the truth, so then it's kosher. You have nothing to do, if all the work for the business is all taken care of, so I have extra time. So I just sit and twiddle my thumbs. So I have extra time, so it's understood. I can do my own work. But if the boss really needs me all day long from 9 to 5 to do the work, so then I'm supposed to put in the full day's work for the boss. Yaakov Avinu says to his wife, Aten yedatin ki b'chol kochi avarati esavichim. So the Rambam quotes that Yaakov HaTzadik. He doesn't say Yankov Avinu. He says Yankov HaTzadik says B'chol koichi abarati asavicha. I put in my full effort and energy to work for my boss, his father-in-law. A lot of times you have a situation: the previous worker didn't know how to use a computer, and the previous secretary had to type everything by hand, and it took forever. And she only succeeded in typing 20 letters a day, and she got such a salary. And I'm getting the same salary that she got, and I can use a computer. I can type all the 20 letters in 2 minutes. So he's supposed to do that in 2 minutes. He's supposed to finish typing. He shouldn't say, I'm getting the same salary as the previous worker, so I'll just do the same amount of work as the previous worker. You have to work b'chol koicha. It doesn't mean you have to go out of your mind to go crazy. Not to go to the bathroom. You're allowed to go to the bathroom. You're allowed to say ashirotza. You're allowed to have a lunch break. You're allowed to daven milch also. It has to be within reason. But to take away time from the boss, if it's understood that the boss wants you to work all day long, so it's understood all day long. If it's understood that you can call your spouse in the middle, or call for a date in the middle, okay? So it's understood a little bit of a hapsok, you need a little diversion also. It helps you work better. If you have a little diversion, it helps you work better.
What about if you're a doctor and you have to call for a doctor? How does that work?
You have a call on Shabbos.
Yes,
if you think it's a pikuach nefesh, you're allowed to go. A doctor is not allowed to be mechal Shabbos either. Or whatever profession one goes into, he's not allowed to be mechal Shabbos. So if a doctor has a situation of suffix hakonis nefashis, so you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos.
Sherman has this essay where he writes that there are those who think that whatever gzeiris the rabbis made, and whatever gzeiris, whatever hachokas the rabbis didn't introduce, are permissible. Why do we have to make our own gzeiris, our own hachokas? He says it's not true. The pasuk speaks to every individual person. The pasuk says in Parshas Achimos, it was a concluding pasuk, and the Parshas says Mishmartefes Mishmarti, and the tradition has it that it means Matsu Mishmeris and Mishmarti. Each person has to make his own hachokas. If I work in an office, I see certain problems I'm going to have. A person works in a university, has another problem. A person is in business, he has another problem. Each person, a doctor, a nurse, whatever, each person has his own problem. problem based on his society, based on his what generation he lives in, and what country he lives in, and what he does for a living. So each person has to make his own hakakis. He has to draw a line, atkan and not further. Whatever Xeris the Talmud made, those are binding on all the Jews and all generations, whatever you go with, whatever your circumstances are. But each person has to assess the situation and make his own hakakis. You're not allowed to walk up to the edge of the cliff because he may fall over. You have to step back. You have to step back a mile away because he's going to fall over the cliff. Person has to figure out where is it close to the cliff. Drinking alcoholic beverages with non-Jewish people, even with Jewish boys, I wouldn't recommend. Live in a generation where there was every day in the newspaper. So we have to be careful not to drink alcoholic beverages. Shabbos and Yantav, make Kiddush, okay? That you can drink wine. Really ought to, yeah. I never applied for a job, so I don't know what's going on. I never applied for any job, even in the yeshiva. I never applied for any job. I have a lot of jobs. Every job fell into my lap. I really don't know. You don't have to ruin your opportunity to get a job. First, you have to convince the... I don't know how many interviews there are. So first, you have to convince the person that you're... that you're what he's looking for. And then you have to tell him at some point before he clinches the deal, you have to let him know that you can't come in on Shabbos, you can't do any work on Shabbos. You'd be happy to have the work, do the work on Matzoi Shabbos, okay? There are lawyers that get delivered, FedEx, that get delivered right after Havdalah, they get delivered tons of work and they stay up all Matzoi Shabbos and they do all the work that they were supposed to do on Shabbos. The Shem Shabbos and they do it on Matzoi Shabbos. I would think so. I see every morning in the yeshiva, boys come in with their cell phones and they plug it into the yeshiva plug. Is that right? I thought it's Geneva. So let them plug it in their own plugs at home. In the dormitory rooms, okay, in the dormitory, it's assumed that they're using the electricity, but to come to the base medrash and use it. I think it's not permissible unless the boss says it's okay, unless he understands and he approves. Sometimes the boss will be reasonable about it.
I work for the city, so I would have to talk to Bloomberg because my principal is not, so I guess I shouldn't fire.
Better would be to be machmir. Even if it's mutter, better would be we live in a generation where there's so much geneva going on. The Orthodox Jews should be machmir on this. Better not to. Moshe Feinstein has a little tshuva where he writes that although there are those who are of the opinion that wearing a yarmulke today is a biblical requirement, Chukas Hagoyim, he says, we don't accept that opinion. We assume that it's only a minhag. So more severe, more chomer are the dinim min haTorah, then you have dinim min haRabbanan, then you have minhagim, a slightly lower level than dinim min haRabbanan. So if a person thinks that for lots of purposes, let's say when Baron Lichtenstein went to apply to Harvard, so Rabbi Soloveitchik told him, make sure you don't wear a yarmulke because they're not going to accept you. He didn't listen to Rabbi Soloveitchik. He got in even with the yarmulke. But there was a lot of anti-Semitism. Rabbi Soloveitchik recommended you go without a yarmulke. A lot of times you go apply for a job, so you're going to wear a yarmulke, so right away they're not going to take you. They're not going to look at you. So maybe it's a good idea to wear a hat. And when you take off the hat, maybe not to put on a yarmulke. A lot of men are so makbid about the yarmulke, they would never compromise about that. They don't care. Moshe Feinstein said it's permissible. They don't care. But the married women have to cover the hair. That's a real din. That's a din and a third. So married women that married women don't cover the hair at all. That's not right. We assume that that's a real din. The yarmulke is only a minig, and there's room to negotiate on the yarmulke.
used to have a Rebbe in the yeshiva, Rabbi Ruby Aberman. So he visited Russia twice before the Iron Curtain fell down. So they used to smuggle in religious Jews. Yeshiva Bachman used to go. Rabbanim used to go to teach Torah all over the place. So he said he went with his friend. They went from America. They went to England, and they were sent by the Jewish women's organization in England. They went to Russia. So he said they came to a certain address, and every week someone else gave a shiur there. So they had to give a shiur on Ksuvos Daf Ayin Beis. That's about the women covering their hair, married women covering their hair. So he gave a shiur. So a small group, 12 people in the room, a private home. So a woman asks him, "What's the din if you're going to cover your hair and they're going to fire you?" So he didn't realize the woman is halacha lemaisa. She's asking, "What's the din?" So he says, "Oh, there's a big rabbi in America, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, and he writes in a sefer that if the woman is divorced, the requirement to cover her hair is only by the rabbanon. So if she's afraid she's going to lose her job, she won't be able to get her shidduch. So Rabbi Moshe is mekel. He has a whole pilpul on Rashi, and he shows him where the Rashi is on Daf Ayin Beis and Ksuvos. But if the woman is married, then it's a biblical din that she has to cover her hair. And even if she's going to lose her job, she's not allowed to violate it." So he says, 2 years later, he goes back, and he's at the same address again. And he sees this woman has a big babushka. When he came the first time, she didn't cover him. He came the second time, she was wearing a big babushka. So after he gave his shiur, whatever it was, so he asked, "What's the story with that woman?" So they told him she was the head of obstetrics in her hospital. She never heard of him, Rubia. She never heard of Rav Moshe Feinstein. She never heard of this Gemara in Ksuvos. But he said the Gemara, and she asked, "What's the din if they're going to fire you?" So he said, "The din is you have to cover your hair, even if you're going to lose your job." So the next morning, she went into work, into the hospital, she covered her hair with a big babushka. They fired her on the spot, and they maintained her as a janitor in the hospital. And whenever she's not allowed to touch any patients, because she's no longer on the medical staff, when there would be a difficult delivery, so she would have to be in the room, she's not allowed to touch the patient, she would tell the doctor what to do. The woman never heard of Rabbi Yehudit. She never heard of Moshe Feinstein. And she lived under the Russians. And they told her a din, so they told us a din, you have to cover here. So in America, a lot of the men are so makbid on wearing yarmulkes, there's room to be mekel. If you're afraid you're really going to lose parnosa, there's room to be mekel on the yarmulke. By the women, it's a more serious issue.
Would it be disingenuous to go into an interview not wearing the yarmulke, but you're afraid that you wouldn't hire you if you saw you, and then on day one you start wearing the yarmulke, and it would seem a little, for the same Shom Shabbos,
Well, I'm fooling him into believing that I'm not a religious Jew, and on principle he doesn't want to hire a religious Jew because he's anti-Semitic or he's anti-religious or something. If I do the job as well as anybody else on the top, I don't think I have the job. He's not allowed to discriminate against me. I think that's not right on his part. He has a right to expect of the workers, if you work in a pressured law firm, and sometimes they want the workers to work a whole weekend. So if you won't be able to do that, so you have to let them know that up front. But to wear a yarmulke, so the world isn't going to come to an end because the guy's going to wear a yarmulke. Unless Taka, the business deals with a lot of people who would not want to do business with them. If they're going to say, then Taka shouldn't wear a yarmulke in the office. So let him come in with a hat, and then take off the hat and do the work in the office with that. And when he eats his lunch, he'll put on his yarmulke in a private room and he'll say the brachas. I'll take off the yarmulke.
If someone in their office is not wearing a yarmulke, go back and forth to the bathroom, have a cup of water, should they always put a kippah on to say the brachos, or is it not a big deal to say the brachos for the other people? Like, how much of an issue is that?
That's a big machlekes, whether that's a real dinner, that's also only a minhag. So that, we should be careful to put on a yarmulke. Sleep over your head. If you put your hand, it doesn't help, but if you put your sleeve over your head, it's easier already to wear it than to put your sleeve over your head. Yeah. We almost solved all the world's problems. Yeah.
If I bring a meat sandwich to the office, or from Jersey, for example, the food there, and it stays in the refrigerator, is there a problem of putting a cinnamon on it for the next for a few hours?
The original din in the Gemara about Basa Shemisaleh Min Ha'ayin is that we're afraid that maybe an animal came and switched the food. So we don't have any animals roaming around. You have to be concerned, maybe one of the non-Jews will steal my sandwich and replace it with a non-kosher sandwich. So if I know that this is the way I wrap my sandwich, I can recognize it, I see what the... I can tell this is my sandwich. Yeah, that's enough of a sin. You have a tefillah sign, that's enough of a sin. Usually it's not going to happen. We don't have the animals that are roaming around. And we don't have the non-Jews. Are not most of the non-Jews are not interested. We're not choshed a non-Jew that is going to switch lahachas. Only choshed a non-Jew, he may, since the mad cow disease a couple of years ago, so many non-Jews started eating kosher food. They wrote it up in the newspapers because they realized that if they would keep kosher, they wouldn't have gotten sick with the mad cow disease. Sometimes people are interested in seeing what kosher food tastes like. But if you think that the chashash that really doesn't really apply, so then it's okay. Then there's no problem. A good tabach, everybody. Ruchim to you. Shalom aleichem.